Welcome to Pamela Private Eye. I'm here again today with my friend Shelley.
Hi, Pamela. Glad to be here. I can't wait to hear what we're doing today.
Oh, I know. This is a really cool one. But before we get into it, just want to remind everyone, if you're enjoying the podcast, I hope you are. Please rate and review us. Share us on Facebook,
subscribe,
social media.
Subscribe.
Yeah, like help us get the word out because we are having a blast and we want to be able to keep doing this. So, and if you're having
we
fun
are,
with us,
and we hope you're loving it as much as we are. Yes, exactly.
Totally. So please reach out to us. Send us messages however you find us, whether on Instagram, Facebook, on the website, PamelaPrivateEye.com. On the blog page, it says read more and comment. So you can click that and leave me comments. I want to hear what you guys think and feel about this stuff. I know what Shelley and I think, but we want to know what you're thinking.
Exactly. I always want to know if our subscribers and our followers are as shocked sometimes as I am. Like sometimes it just catches me off guard. So I'd love to hear that too.
Yeah, me too. That would be really interesting.
Yeah.
And I'm curious whether, is it just me? Like, am I drinking my own Kool-Aid? Are some of these?
Exactly.
So
do we just think we're funny or what? I also think it would be interesting to hear what subjects they like. Is there, you know, we try to change it up with some funny ones,
right.
Some very, very serious ones. Some of your very first cases that were hysterically funny.
Right. Yeah. What do you
want to
hear more
of? So.
Yeah. But I'd love to hear that.
Yeah.
Too. Which episodes do you find the most interesting? And what are you not mm-hmm. so interested in? Mm-hmm. Like, that would be good to know. Yeah. Great idea. So This week's episode, I call this Murder at the Motel.
Ooh, okay.
This was a case that was really big in the news. Absolute senseless murder.
Oh.
Really tragic. So mm-hmm. this guy was working nights at the registration desk at the motel so he could support his young family. He had two little kids while he was going to school.
Oh,
he was
no.
a veteran mm-hmm. of the Iraq War. He was also getting his commercial pilot license. He wanted to fly commercially. I mean, this guy was like, he had it all going on.
Yeah.
He was a great guy. Disciplined
And
guy.
He was making all the correct steps for his family.
Yeah. These young guys go to the hotel to rob the hotel. Now, who robs a motel? This was
right. credit
this was
cards.
Probably 10 years ago. Exactly. People don't pay in cash for a motel.
No.
It's so rare that they do. So there's not going to be much money to get.
Mm-hmm.
So it tells us these guys were not very sophisticated in their plan.
Mm-hmm.
They were really very young teenagers, like 18 years old, 19 years old. Ugh. Young, dumb guys.
Yeah.
And I say dumb just because this was so dumb
yeah.
and senseless.
Yes.
And because it was so senseless, it was a really big case in the news.
Mm-hmm.
And my client didn't have any money. There were three guys. I believe my client was in the vehicle. He was the lookout. That was his
okay.
job.
Okay.
That's what he told me he did. And I will explain why I believe that as the case goes on. And what they signed up for, the two guys that waited in the car signed up for robbery.
Okay.
Now, here is a lesson. I hope, I don't know if anyone young is listening to our podcast at all, but if they are, if there is a young man out there listening, or if you have a young man in your life, please. I have cases where they go along on some stupid idea because
uh-huh.
this testosterone,
cool.
these young men and their
mm-hmm.
brains are not fully mm-hmm. developed yet.
Yep.
And they go along with some stupid scheme. Thinking, okay, like we'll go rob this place. It'll be really awesome. And it turns into murder because what happened is Todd, the name of the lead gangster guy in this.
Okay.
I call him a gangster not very lightly. I don't take that term lightly. Todd aspired to be a gangster.
Okay.
Todd was actually a white guy. He was a white kid.
Okay.
And he wanted to be black.
Okay.
So bad.
Did to be this, cool.
He, mm-hmm. Yeah, because he thought that would be so much cooler. So he dressed black. He told people he was black. I mean, I interviewed all kinds of kids that were in their lives.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone heard Todd telling them that he was black, which just seemed really odd to me.
Yeah.
That someone... And,
white.
And you hear, it's very rare, but sometimes people actually will want to change their race because
right.
they think the other one's cooler.
Yeah.
whether you're Michael Jackson.
Right, right. Yeah.
Todd Rettenberger in this case.
Right.
Growing up is hard, and figuring out who we are in the world and how we're important is even harder sometimes, especially when we're young, trying to figure out how are we important in the world? How are we significant? And I believe in this case for these young men, they got their significance by being bad.
Right.
I see this a lot in my investigation.
Yeah.
And Todd was significant in his world for being a black gangster.
Right.
So it's a really dangerous thing. What we choose that gives us our significance, because even if it's a bad thing that is harmful to us and others around us, if that's where we get our significance, that need for significance is so great. Sometimes we'll make horrible decisions in our life just to fill that need.
Right.
Todd was, he was the mastermind of this. And he decided, we'll go rob this motel and then we'll have money. So Todd goes into the motel. The victim is working the counter. It's about 10 o'clock at night. And Todd hangs around in the lobby a bit, waiting. There's like a vending machine there. He's hanging around, pretending like he's looking, see if he's going to buy anything. One person comes down, and then he kind of walks down the hall to get away from them so they don't see him. Then he comes back. So he's actually kind of hanging around the lobby for a little
bit.
Kind
of casing the joint?
Well, I think my guess is while he's getting up the courage to
rob
the motel. And finally, it seems quiet enough. He approaches the guy, pulls out a gun, says, hey, this is robbery. Give me all the money. And sadly, the employee victim wouldn't give it up.
Oh, no.
He said, it's in a safe.
I can't access it.
I'm not going to access it. Yeah, I can't open it. And then it turned into this physical fight. What we know is from the position of the body, the victim came around from behind the counter.
Okay.
And was actually in a physical altercation with
thinking Todd. He was going to be able to stop
Well, I think so. And, you know, when you have the background that he was a veteran
right,
in Iraq
right.
war and stuff, it makes a little more sense that he thought that he could do some maneuvers to get the gun away maybe. But you know, I don't care who you are. If there's a gunfight, you don't want to get in a gunfight, especially if you don't have a gun.
Right. Nobody can outrun a bullet.
To protect himself. So, PI tip, don't get in a gunfight without a gun. If you cannot get in a gunfight, don't get in. Run away. I tell people that all the time. I told you that on the tips with the attempted kidnapping and rape. Just run. Don't get in the car. Even if they have a gun, your chances of survival are better.
And if you're being robbed, don't give them what they want and get them out the door.
Just give up the stuff.
It's not worth it.
You can get more stuff.
Yeah.
The motel has insurance. They'll recover, but you won't. Your children will not. So they get in a fight. Of course, he loses the fight because he gets killed. He's shot three times.
Oh, wow.
Of course, with surveillance cameras, with everything that we have these days, it was only a matter of days before they caught and arrested Todd. Then Todd, when they brought him in, now, mind you, he's only like 18 years old. They brought him in and they were interrogating him for hours. And they read him his rights. Part of our Miranda rights, you have a right to an attorney. If you don't have one, one will be appointed for you. Do you want to talk anyway? Well, I think Todd, thinking, and I've read just about every jail letter note that Todd wrote while he was in preparing for this. So I have a little bit of understanding of his psychology and mindset. Pretty big ego. I think he probably thought he could talk his way out of stuff.
Oh, serious?
And so he agreed to talk without an attorney present.
Okay. Yeah.
And they outmaneuvered
him. Of course.
They're
professionals.
They're skilled.
Yeah.
They're professionals.
And he's guilty.
And they get a confession.
Yeah, and he's guilty.
And he's guilty. So he confesses, and in part of the confession, he tells them, I had these two buddies with me. And he names my client. My client's name was Rashad. Okay. And the other guy's name was David. Both of those guys were black, very dark-skinned guys. Todd was not even dark-skinned as a white guy. I can't figure out how. It's like everyone knew he wasn't black, but they all said he was black because Todd told them he was
black. That's so weird.
It was the weirdest
thing. That's really weird.
So it is. In Todd's first and only confession, he tells them that he has two friends with him. One was the getaway driver. which is David.
Okay.
And the other one was The Lookout. And that became my client, Rashad. Shortly after his confession, he gets an attorney appointed for him, a public defender, because they don't have any money.
Of course.
Oh, here's a sad fact. How much do you think they got for this robbery and murder?
Well, if you're at a hotel, I would say, oh my heavens, under $200.
Very good guess. Just barely over 200.
Yeah.
This guy was killed for $200. Senseless. A total waste. Right. Todd gets a defense attorney, and his defense attorney was very good. And because of that, he started filing motions to throw that confession out because he didn't understand the concept. And I have to agree. Here's the thing. People say all the time when they watch like true crime shows mm-hmm. and there is a confession involved in the case, they say, oh, that is absolutely ridiculous. No one would ever confess unless they did it. That's actually not true. We have a lot of science showing now that people, when they are, and they interrogate them for hours
and they lie,
and they can legally, they can lie while they are trying to get a confession.
Right.
That's the way the law is set up. I don't like that part of the law, but it is the way it is. And they'll say things like, hey, come on, if you just confess to this, then we'll go easy on you.
Yeah.
We got you.
Right.
We got you. And so they'll confess. And sometimes it's a great thing. Sometimes it's an awful thing.
Right.
In this case, Todd's lawyer was so relentless, so good. And my compliments to him for fighting for his client's rights on this, because he took it all the way to the Supreme Court. And the confession was ultimately thrown out.
Really?
Yeah, because he didn't have an attorney present.
Okay.
And I don't know all the details of the appeal.
Right.
But when I read through the appeal, I learned that pretty early on in the interrogation, Todd had made the comment, yes, I'm going to get an attorney. At that moment when he says, I'm going to get one or I want one, they should have at the very least said, do you want one right now? And given Todd the opportunity to say, no, I'm fine, let's proceed. Because when they didn't, that is what got the confession talked
about. Well, and he was arrogant. So he thought, you know, what 18-year-old doesn't know everything, right? Know it all. So,
yes. And we learned in the last episode mm-hmm. with Shane that sometimes thinking that we're really smart and that we're the smartest person in the room.
Exactly. Exactly.
It can really be them. So that process to get to the Supreme Court is such a long process. It took 5.5 years.
What?
So Todd was in jail that entire time.
And he wasn't moved. Okay, so in other cases, when you're in jail, they don't move you on to prison. So you're in jail for 5.5 years?
Right.
Wow.
Yes. That is an insane amount of time to be in jail. And it really is a difficult thing because they don't have programs. I've mentioned this before. Uh-huh. In prison, they have. You can get your education. You can do all kinds of great things while you're in prison because we plan on people being there a long time. But most people, the maximum they spend in jail is 1 year.
Right.
And this was a lot of time. But while that was all happening, my client was free.
Okay.
And so was the other co-defendant.
Okay.
And during that time.
Okay, I have a question.
Sure.
So when he did his confession, he said he had two other people with him, your client and the other kid. So when the confession is thrown out, then they are thrown out with it, correct? Because it's like that confession never happened. So they can't do anything to your client because.
Right.
Okay.
Well, they can. They charged my client with murder.
Well, how can they with no confession?
Right. So now they can't base it on the confession. So now they can say they based it on surveillance video and other witnesses. And once they have a confession from someone, then they can go and interview people and actually get witnesses to say things. In cases where there's a false confession, I've seen cases where they actually will manipulate and lead witnesses in a direction to say, oh, yeah, I did see them, to actually... Eyewitness testimony is actually sometimes really skeptical, very shaky ground. And sometimes it's great ground. It depends on how close you were to the person.
Right.
But I've been in seminars where I've seen cases where they are like eyewitnesses across the street, down the street, and they claim they saw the person and recognize the person that came running out after a murder. That's much different than someone that sees them 5 feet away.
Right.
So it just, it all depends. Every case is so different.
I was going to say, I've even heard that if you check with like three or four different people that see a car accident, by the time it's all reviewed, some will say it's a truck, some will say it's a car. They've got different colors. You know what I mean? You just never know what people are projecting to pull that information out. So
As a PI, it is so fascinating. Exactly what you're saying. As it is so fascinating on any case to hear people can see the same thing and you interview.
You could be standing next to each other.
10 different perspectives. Yeah. Yes, they right next to each other. So it's really fascinating what people see. So I try to get as many witnesses that are consistent so I can get an idea of what the real picture is.
Right.
I know we just did a PI tip, but here is another PI tip. I heard Pitbull, the artist, say the other day, show me your friends and I'll show you your future.
That is a great quote.
I thought it was a really cool quote. And along the line of that, here's my PI tip. Don't hang around with people that are committing crimes.
Yeah.
Even if you think I'm just there, I'm the lookout person, and I'm just participating in a robbery. For Rashad, he was now facing murder charges, and he never left the car. He agreed to participate in a robbery. If he got his third of the money, he got $70, and now he's facing murder charges. And he's young.
That's his whole life.
It's his whole life. So pay attention to who you're hanging out with, the people around you, because you're not just an accessory. They will very often charge you as the murderer. And what happened with Todd was, after those 5.5 years of fighting his confession, when the Supreme Court threw out the confession, the prosecutors did the best thing they could do. And so they came to Todd to work out a deal because they'd already gotten 5.5 years of time out of him. So they decided, we'll offer you a deal. The deal was that they charged Todd with a lesser crime after years of fighting with the Supreme Court. Well, it went to the state Supreme Court.
Right.
And they threw out the confession. Then they came back. They offered him a deal to plead guilty to manslaughter.
Okay.
And as part of that, he, in exchange, he would testify against the other two guys. So I see this all the time. When they switch over and testify against someone else, then
they get a better deal.
Then they are not the murderer
anymore. That's not right.
As part of his deal, he got time served because he'd been in jail for 5.5 years. And all he had to do is testify against Rashad and David, who he had never said were in the hotel with him, in the motel with him. And they never said they were in the motel. Here we are 5.5 years later, and we're getting ready for trial now for Rashad. And I was doing everything I could. And he had a public defender. This guy's name was Rich. He was a very good lawyer. I liked working with him. Some public defenders are not very good. Some are really, really good. You just kind of get lucky sometimes and get a really, really great attorney. It's a kind of a grab bag. You know what? It's a grab bag even if you pay for them.
True.
Even if you pay for your lawyer. Even if they have a big name, it's a grab bag. And I'm saying that because I've worked with the big names. I've worked with the guys that are building their name. And some of the guys at the building on the way up are absolutely amazing. And some of the guys at the top aren't worth anything, in my opinion.
Yeah, true.
They're not worth your time to even talk to them. So I started investigating this case and trying to figure out if my client's telling the truth. Was he just the getaway driver? What was his relationship like with Todd? Right. And in this whole process, like, because Todd's in jail the whole time, they're literally providing to the defense. They're giving us, every time Todd would draw a picture in his jail cell, every time he would write a letter, every time he would make a note. And remember, there are no programs for him to do. So he's doing a fair amount of that. Every time he'd do that, we are getting copies of, as the defense, we get to see everything that he is doing. Every phone call he makes to someone. They record those. We are hearing those phone calls. We're hearing, listening, watching. We're going through every single thing.
Right. Stacks and stacks of information. Yeah.
Yep. And here's what was really, really disturbing to me about Todd's psyche, in my opinion. Those pictures that he was drawing were so dark. Absolute. It just felt like evil.
Yeah.
And I've told you many times, most of my clients, I don't believe are evil people. And I know my clients have done some really evil things.
Right. Yeah.
But I don't believe they're evil people.
Right.
Very rarely do I say that there's like darkness with someone. Right. And I do think we can go through things and there'll be like this bad energy, this darkness sure. around us. Mm-hmm. And I do believe we can get rid of it. Like in Bobby's case, the murder case, when I first met him, there was real darkness around him. And as time went on and he actually right. sought a higher power and
yeah.
whatever you want to call that, God, Jesus, whatever it is, it changed him and changed his energy.
Right, right.
For Todd, he would mm-hmm. literally write lists of the top gangsters.
Right.
People that he wanted to aspire to be. Al Capone was at the top. Jimmy Hoffa. Naming these people like, these people are people. I want to be just like them. Who does that?
Oh,
that
is, wow.
So I started interviewing.
Interesting.
Like, kids.
Yeah.
And I call
yeah.
them kids. They're adults, but they're very young. But I started interviewing them to find out, to put all these pieces together. Who is Rashad? Who's my client? Is he a bad guy? I mean, if we're just looking at the color of skin, it'd be right. easy to say Rashad and David LeDuc were the worst guys. And if we're just listening to Todd, but looking at the evidence, it was actually showing me differently right. than that. I went and interviewed some of the witnesses. Well, I remember being kind of right. scared going into this neighborhood because I just don't know. They yeah. knew all these kids. They knew David LeDuc. They knew Rashad. They knew Todd and were friends with them. And mm-hmm. I was getting the same mm-hmm. story from these kids that Todd was telling everyone, I'm black. I'm a big gangster. I'm all that. And that he was always leading. He wanted to be mm-hmm. like the lead gangster, mm-hmm. like an Al Capone. And there's a reason we know mm-hmm. Al Capone's name. I mean, these guys are
right.
Like
right.
notorious. They're infamous
right.
for
the,
infamy
right.
for
right.
their
badass.
Evil.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so, and I remember, like, I was even kind of worried about my car. Not that my car is, like, so nice. But I, like, it was a pretty rough neighborhood. And my car stood out a little
yeah.
bit. And I was like, oh, I hope that they know, like, that I'm, like, a nice person. I'm here helping these
right.
guys.
Yeah.
Like, I'm trying
don't,
to help
don't break into my car. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because I didn't blend in at all. But pretty much everyone in the neighborhood had dark hair, dark skin. And I'm
right.
not blending
right.
in any way. But I'm like, please don't
no.
do anything. Like, I'm a good guy.
Little blonde white girl.
Yeah. I was so happy to hear that Rashad was not. Yeah, he was hanging around with Todd. But Rashad was not the guy. Uh-huh. He was not instigating this.
And the one they were trying to. Yeah.
And I was glad to know that. They were telling mm-hmm. me he's actually a really good kid. He grew up with a single mom. I was so hopeful that, hey, maybe my
right.
guy is not so bad because this case was kind of hard for me to take.
Right.
I didn't want to go defend some guy that had committed murder of just someone that was just a little bit younger than I was trying to get their life going. Like, God,
yeah.
that sucks. And I'm defending
yeah.
the person that killed them. Like, what?
Right.
So it was really nice to know that very likely my guy, yeah, he was an accessory. He participated. I'm not, like, that was so, so wrong.
Right.
But he didn't, I don't even think Todd meant, he didn't go in there planning to murder
right.
him.
Right. But he did.
Man, you take yeah. a gun to a fight,
you're going to use it.
You're going to probably mm-hmm. use it. You don't want to
yeah.
do that. I came out of that meeting really hopeful. I'm excited. I leave and I had to go. I was rushing to get to one of like my tithing gigs that I do, my heart and soul gigs
uh-huh.
that I do for
yeah.
free. And most of my
yeah.
gigs with the
uh-huh.
band
service.
Are like, yeah, my service stuff. And most of the guys, band stuff, like I'm usually like in an evening gown or something, like we doing some really nice gigs and getting paid well, or we're opening for
uh-huh.
a concert or something. It's really big. But these gigs, I'm not kidding. I was late and I'm kind of panicked that I'm late and I'm playing. It was like a nursing home rehab. And some of them are just like assisted
yeah.
living and people mentally, they're all there. It's just fun and they get all my jokes and they can connect. And I never know
right.
what I'm walking into. That's also a grab bag. Like, I don't know what my audience is going to be ever,
right.
ever. Whether like, you never know. So I get
uh-huh.
to this place and they're older for some reason. And I don't know how they distinguish, but these guys had like some mental
uh-huh.
issues. And I'm doing this with my piano player. And thankfully, because I'm late coming from those interviews, Merrill is always on time, and he just goes and sits at his piano very, like, to the T letter of how everything's done. And so he starts entertaining them. He's very quiet. He talks very quietly. So then I get there, I'm like, here I am. So I get there, we start playing, and there were probably only like 15 people. Two-thirds of them were in wheelchairs. And I'm playing, and I just kind of fill the room, whether it's like a really posh gig or whatever it is, I kind of fill it to see what songs we're going to play next. Mm-hmm. Because I try to do like upbeat stuff, then mellow, slow stuff. Every time I do a slow song, I just have to tell you this story because it just made me laugh. I'll never forget this gig. And every time I do like a slower song, this one woman in a wheelchair to my right, she would start crying.
Aww.
At first I thought, oh, this song's like really emotional for her. Like,
stop.
I don't know if it meant something to her and her husband or what. So yeah, so I was like, okay, like we'll just hurry to end this song. And then we did some more upbeat stuff. And then I did another slow song and she cried again. And I was like, oh man, I have to just only do like upbeat songs. And she starts crying and she was really, really verbal. This whole audience, everyone was really talkative with me. It was really cool. And this woman, she says, that song reminds me of my husband. And that's what I was afraid of. And I was like, oh, I'm sorry. And she's like, yeah, Ringo Starr.
You're like-
I was like, what?
Wow.
Oh,
that husband.
You're married to Ringo Starr. I said, like, you mean of the Beatles? Because I'm pretty sure they're not two Ringo Starrs. She's like, yeah, that's my husband.
Oh,
okay. So I'd play some upbeat stuff and then I'd play slow and and then she'd talk about her husband, Ringo Starr again. Okay. So I decided I'll do something fun. So I was like, hey, I'm dedicating this one to you and your husband, Ringo Starr. We did Can't Buy Me Love. We do the song. She's so happy. Like, yay. I hit the mark. This is really making her feel good. And I finished the song and she starts going off about, you know, and she starts telling me all this Beatles fact.
Uh-huh.
She goes, you know, Mark David Chapman, he's the guy that shot and killed John Lennon. And I was like, oh, I didn't remember his name, but yeah, I knew that he'd been killed and that was really tragic. And then the woman across the room says, what? Who got shot? And the lady goes, yeah, he got shot 5 times in the back. And the lady's like, who got shot? And this other guy in the back says, Abraham Lincoln. And I was seriously just like,
and off we go into
I laughed so hard. And I thought, this is like the coolest thing that I get to go from such a scary, tense thing to just total like bizarre land. It made me laugh
just
so
gathering
hard.
Gathering. That's because it was the only memories that they had left. They're just putting them all in a pile.
It really was. And I was like, and I didn't even correct the guy on the air. I just laughed and I was like, okay, there we go. Let's just do another song. It was so awesome. It was just a blast. And I thought, I am so grateful for music in my life and the people and the adventures it brings. It was just awesome. Anyway, but I just had to tell you that little quick little ditty because it was too funny. And and it was such a stark contrast from where I was. And I just need like that little bit of light every now and then. As we proceeded for trial, I mean, I was digging, I was looking under every rock that there was. So I actually, we had subpoenaed the motel records to know who the guests were. And I started interviewing hotel guests. Most of them didn't know anything about it. They were at the motel. I mean, they knew that it had happened after the fact, but most of them were not aware of anything.
Right.
However, I found two guests that were not together. They were there at the motel alone. Both of them were in town to do business. So they were from out of state. Mm-hmm. One woman had come down into the lobby to ask the victim at just about 1:45. Mm-hmm. 10. So she was there about 15, 20 minutes before the murder happened. She came down and she was asking about towels. Mm-hmm. Just had a couple of questions about the motel. And she noticed a young white male that seemed a little out of place in the lobby. It seemed like he was kind of loitering mm-hmm. there. She wasn't sure if he was a guest or not. And I totally sure. get that, because as a woman, it's a scary mm-hmm. thing to be alone, especially to be traveling alone. So you're going to pay attention to any man yes. that is yes. around. I don't know if men understand that, but it's
so
a different
true.
World
so
for
true.
Men mm-hmm. than women.
Yep.
And so she noticed this guy hanging, just kind of standing mm-hmm. off in the lobby. She noticed him and was aware. He got her attention. I also found another guy. Like I said, they were not connected. They weren't there together. Mm-hmm. He came down. He had something to do in the lobby, also with the front desk. Spoke for just a second, and he noticed a young white male that was wearing, like, gangster pants, you know, uh-huh. that are falling off their butt.
Saggies.
We'll never, mm-hmm. never understand that no. fashion, mm-hmm. if we call that fashion.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm from the 80s. We wore tight pants, yeah. so I'm stuck in the 80s. Like, that's cool. So anyway, he noticed this young guy at the mm-hmm. vending machine in, like, these kind of gangster. But he noticed him, that this yeah. guy was there alone. Neither of them said that there were two black males in the lobby.
No, and you would notice that.
Neither of those witnesses.
Mm-hmm. And you would highly notice that. Yes. If you can pick out a white kid, then yeah. you would definitely notice if there were two that were black in the lobby. Yes.
And
good.
And
okay,
those
cool.
Those two actually ID'd Todd, his mugshot photo. Yeah, that looks like the guy that was
oh,
there.
Oh, wow.
Now, I don't go, okay. I actually don't go as much from that in this case as evidence, because mm-hmm. those are, that's hard. I mean, it can work, but mm-hmm. I've also heard of so many cases where there's a wrongful conviction based on that. What was a bigger deal to me is that there were not two of them. Like Todd's second statement was.
Right.
And that they were not black.
Right.
Like I said, my client, Rashad and
yes.
Todd, were dark black males. There was
right.
not really a question whether they were white or black. Although Todd claimed to be black. Then later he was saying he was white. So, because that served him
yeah.
better to be white at that point.
Right.
But
sure. Yeah.
At that point, remember, Todd didn't go to trial. Todd took a plea to manslaughter. And as part of that plea, he got the 5.5 years that he had spent in jail as time served. So he got out.
Oh.
So now that he's out.
When did he get out?
5.5 years later.
Oh, he didn't serve any time after the jail time?
No, he did not.
He didn't serve any time after the jail time.
After the plea.
5.5 years and he's out.
He did
yeah.
not go to prison.
Holy cow.
Wait, there's
wow.
more. I cannot wait to tell you what happens later. Like, you
oh, okay.
will be really
holy.
Interested. So,
yeah. Okay.
I love this case.
Okay.
It's really, really fascinating. So, we go to trial with Rashad, and Rich is the lawyer. This is not Rich Casper that I have referred to many times.
Mm-hmm.
This is a different Rich.
Mm-hmm.
Really a damn good lawyer. Okay. I really liked working with him. And I thought we did
okay.
a hell of a job on trial. Of course, the mm-hmm. prosecution brought Todd in to testify. He was the biggest, strongest mm-hmm. witness mm-hmm. against my client.
Right.
And Todd said in his testimony that he was waiting in the car, that he never went into the motel. That,
liar.
That's what I think. And that mm-hmm. Rashad and David went into the motel, and they were the ones that got in the altercation and ultimately killed the victim.
Oh, okay.
That he was out in the getaway car, and then they came out and told him what had happened.
Okay.
He was actually, he sounded very credible. I must admit, he sounded credible on the stand.
Wow.
Thankfully, I had found those two witnesses. We subpoenaed them, flew them in to testify. And mm-hmm. they were solid. They didn't even know Rashad. They'd never seen
right.
Rashad in their life.
Right.
Until they,
right.
Well, it's literally until they got to the witness stand to sit down. They had never seen him before because he wasn't in the lobby.
Right. Right.
So in that trial, it was like a 4-day trial. The jury goes out to deliberate and they are hung.
You're kidding.
We've got a hung jury. They cannot reach a verdict.
Okay.
So when the jurors came back into the courtroom, I remember there were a couple of women that had been crying. It looked like this was really gut-wrenching stuff. And let me just say again, thank you to all the citizens, good civic-minded people that are willing to serve on a jury, because you make the world a better
yes.
place. It's a hard hard, yes. thankless duty. And to sit in judgment of someone is yep. really, really difficult. And I don't know if the women that I saw crying, if they were set that my client did it or if they were set that he didn't. But
right.
irregardless, they couldn't reach a verdict. So it was a hung jury. Then the state has to decide, are they going to retry my client? So they do, because this is a big murder case.
Okay, so wait. On a hung jury, if the state says no, they're not going to, then your client would have walked.
Yes. Yep.
And if they decide to do it again, then your client has to go through the court system again.
We got to go through another trial. At the same time that we got a hung jury, they had the trials separately. So David LeDuc, he had his trial and he was convicted and went to prison and he got sentenced. He got sentenced to 5 to life.
Oh, wow.
David could have spent life in prison. Could spend life in prison. It was wow. serious stuff. So very scary for Rashad.
Yes.
Like I say, I truly believe he was in the car.
Yeah.
And I also believe he deserved some time for participating in this ridiculous, stupid behavior.
Right.
That senselessly took that guy's life.
I agree.
I don't think he should be charged with murder. I think it should have been accessory to murder, but they charge him with murder. And that's what I want to reiterate. Like, hey, if you're going with someone that's doing something stupid and you think, oh, well, I'm not the one doing it. No. That's not how our system works. You will be charged the same.
No.
And I have many cases we're going to be talking about that will show that time and time and time again.
What makes me angry is the guy that actually shot him and was able mm-hmm. to plead out and only got 5 years because he was in jail, is walking the street. And then the two that, the claim they were in the car, he just roll reversed. Yeah. That's not right.
Right. I agree.
Because of the skin.
I agree.
Yeah. The color of your skin, basically. Yeah. It's not right.
Yeah, exactly. That's not right at all.
Mm-hmm. No.
And
not at all.
I actually liked Rashad. I thought he was a good kid. So the state decided to try the case, retry it. So second trial, mm-hmm. can you imagine the stress of facing a murder trial once? Now you're doing it again.
No, you're doing it again.
Yeah. Mm. So Rashad, and while he's getting ready for trial, it takes about a year for them to reschedule. And when we go through something like that, both sides, we learn things that we did wrong. We realize that we could have done things better in the first trial. And so we both get better. By the time you get to a second trial, hopefully we both get better.
Yeah.
So it's almost a year before the second trial approaches. And during that year, Rashad has been doing really well. He's actually, not only is he working and supporting his girlfriend, his baby mama. I wish I'd have so many cases where they're baby mm-hmm. mamas instead of wives and married and but whatever. Mm-hmm. I am at least thankful that he was living with the woman and supporting his child. And while he's doing that,
child
actually mm-hmm. not only was he working, but he had become the manager at Little Caesar's Pizza.
Oh, really?
And that may not seem like a big deal. To me, I thought it was a really big deal. I was really proud of him.
Yeah.
He was doing well.
Yeah.
Working, paying rent, had a car. He had it going on. This is while we're getting ready for trial. He's on his way home from work. He's speeding.
Oh, no.
And now, mind you, he's facing murder charges. He's speeding, gets pulled over for speeding, and he panics that they will throw him in jail. This will be really awful. He's just scared of the police. He's scared of everything. So when they go to pull him over, instead of just pulling over, he hits the gas, takes off, turns into a car chase. Of course. Of course they catch him. So now they have him for fleeing from an officer. That's a third degree felony. Crap. Now we have that to deal with. It's not a huge deal compared to murder. That's like nothing. Right.
But it's on top of it.
But here's the thing. We get to trial. They don't do it at the same. It's not the same trial, but it's in the same county. So it's the same prosecutor. And I actually love this DA. I love Troy Rawlings is the district attorney mm-hmm. in that county, and he's one of the few lawyers that I trust, and one of the few prosecutors that I trust. That guy is a stud. He has it going on. If you bring the truth to Troy, he follows the truth wherever it is.
Cool. Okay.
there are other prosecutors, I can bring them the truth and they won't look at it or listen. They'll just keep drinking their Kool-Aid.
Yeah.
I decided this guy was a bad guy and I'm not going to change my mind. Sure. No matter what facts you show me.
Right.
Yeah. The prosecutor on this case, and Troy wasn't actually the prosecutor. He's the district attorney, the boss of the prosecutor. In fact, he became the district attorney after this trial actually happened and when the appeal happened. So I will explain that to you a little bit later.
Right.
But the prosecutor approached us before trial and he said, look, you need to know if you guys win this case. Now, remember, we damn near won the first murder trial. So he approached us and said, just so you know, if you win this trial, I'm going after Rashad for the fleeing from an officer and he's going to get 4 years.
Yeah, there's no question.
And he was guilty of that. There was we had no defense for that.
Right.
Like, damn it, Rashad, like we don't have enough to deal with.
Crap. Right.
So we go into trial facing, okay, we got to like knock this huge thing out first, then deal with the next thing. But the first thing is this murder trial. So we sit down, we start jury selection. Jury selection is a huge part of trial. These are the people that are going to be looking at you and judging you and deciding your fate. So I always tell my clients, please participate with us in this process.
Right.
Pay attention to the answers that these people answered of questions. Pay attention, even if they just look at you in a way that you think, I don't think this person likes me. If you just feel a bad energy from them, you tell me. Tell me, I don't want that person on the jury. You don't even have to give me a reason.
Yeah.
Like, I don't like the way they're looking at me. Whatever it is, just, I don't like this one. This doesn't feel right to me. Tell me, and I'll try to get them out of there. Because we, each side, the prosecutors and the defense, we have the opportunity to X out people. As we start with a big jury pool, we cross them out for various reasons.
Okay.
Sometimes we have to say reasons. Sometimes we can just, is kind of how we call it. We just use a strike.
Okay.
We can just strike someone. And so I tell that to Rashad. We start the jury process. I like how it's going. I think we've got a pretty good jury. I really do. It was in Davis County. It was a very, very conservative county in Utah. And to get a jury that I felt comfortable about was a good thing. That's a great thing. Because that's a tough county.
Right.
That they're very conservative, like I say. And this is a senseless murder.
Right.
So we are really up against it on this one.
Right.
And we finish the jury selection. We go on a break in between. We're getting ready for opening arguments. They give us a break so we can prep for opening. Rashad comes up to me and he says, hey, I don't like the jury. What? Like, the whole jury?
You couldn't have said something 20 minutes ago?
He said, I just don't feel good about it. I can't do it. Let's take a plea.
Oh, you're kidding.
Said, really? Are you sure you want this? I was like, are you sure you want to do this? And he said, look, even if we win this, they're going to get me for 5 years on the other thing. I think I should do it. So I said, okay. So we went to Rich, explained the situation. He agreed that our risks are really great. Went and approached the prosecutor and they offered us a deal. So we pled to a third degree manslaughter and he got 5 years. So he actually got out of prison in 4. And I thought that was fair.
Okay.
I didn't really like the manslaughter, but however, he participated in this.
Yes,
so
he did. Whether he was in the car or not.
Right.
Yeah.
And there are a few things about this case that I just am in awe of. One of those things is the victim's family. That guy's family were so incredibly Christ-like. I can't imagine the emotions that I would have if someone had senselessly killed my son, who was a rock star. I mean, the guy was a veteran going to school. He had a young, two little kids, a 5-year-old and a 3-year-old, and working like
a wife.
And a young wife, and had like his whole life ahead of him. And the comment from and so here things kind of worked out really interestingly because I loved to see how this ultimately turned out. So David LeDuc, remember, he got 5 to life, likely was going to spend at least 20 years in prison. After about 5 years, a good friend of mine who is a damn good lawyer named Liz Hunt, Liz did an appeal for David LeDuc. And appeals almost never work. Almost never work. You can't, it's difficult just to even get a court to even look at your appeal. You have to have a very good reason to even, you have to have new evidence or something new. You can't just say, I don't like the outcome. Right. Mm-hmm. I want you to reconsider this. But Liz was able to get this turned over. She got David LeDuc's case tossed out because, this is a big coup for me, because David LeDuc's defense lawyer did not hire a private investigator.
Oh, you're kidding.
And because he didn't, right. When Todd Rettenberger testified against him in trial, remember, I told you he testified against Rashad,
right.
And I thought he was a really solid witness.
Right.
If I didn't have other witnesses sure. to contradict what he said, I would probably have believed him. Mm-hmm. Because David LeDuc's attorney didn't hire a private investigator, they didn't have those witnesses. They didn't know
wow.
that there were two people that had come mm-hmm. into the motel. Mm-hmm. That attorney didn't call my attorney to corroborate with us at
yeah.
all. I mean, there are times when they'll share my services
right.
between multiple lawyers.
Uh-huh.
They could have done that. I would have been happy to do that
right.
for them.
Right.
I didn't even know that was happening. So here, this kid gets convicted and he didn't even have a defense, really.
Right.
The Supreme Court agreed with that. And thankfully to Liz, she got that thing tossed out. So now it's the same situation. So that conviction is tossed out. So now the DA's office is another like 5.5 years later.
So now it's been 10 years since the killing, since
now
the murder.
Exactly. It's really okay. been almost 11 years since the murder.
Wow.
Troy Rawlings, Davis County District Attorney, he had to make a decision now. Do we retry this case? Troy worked with the victim's family. They did not want to go through another trial.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't blame them. And they came to the conclusion that they agreed to not prosecute him again.
Wow.
And but who knows if they would be able to find those witnesses again.
Right.
That's the scary part. The further you get away from a trial, the harder it is to get justice, to get the truth.
Right.
Because you're farther
sure.
away from, victims are gone, witnesses
right.
are gone. They're harder to locate sometimes. And you just, so it's harder to reconstruct the situation. So kudos to Liz Hunt for getting that tossed out based on that, because everyone deserves a
right.
fair trial. This is
right.
America. And I am constantly in awe of Troy Rawlings and how fair he is as a prosecutor.
He has great integrity.
He has more integrity than mm-hmm. any. He's amazing as a
That's
prosecutor.
Cool.
The very best I've ever dealt with. And I've had clients go up against him that are guilty and clients that are innocent. And
right.
he treats everyone with fairness. And I love that. Love that about him. So Rashad served. He had 5. They let him out in 4.
Mm-hmm.
And thankfully, true for both Rashad and David, neither one of them have been charged with any other crime since that time.
Oh, good.
And that's
good.
Now been, yeah, that's now been years. So
good. Good.
They have gone on to live kind of like I think the Catholics say, go and sin no more.
Right. Uh-huh. Yeah, serious.
Kind of like that. They yeah. have gone and sin no more. Now, I can't say the same thing for Todd Rettenberger,
mm-hmm.
who I believe was the shooter and the guy that masterminded the whole thing, that I saw of his dark pictures and his aspirations to be Al Capone.
Mm-hmm.
He was later tried and convicted for sex trafficking and money laundering.
Oh, you're kidding. Scum.
He went to prison.
Good.
So you were frustrated that he'd only gone to jail.
Mm-hmm.
You don't need to be frustrated anymore.
Yay.
He actually ended up going to prison for the sex trafficking. He had a number of girls. One of his victims I had read, and who knows if it's true, but it's part of the record that he had gotten her into heroin.
Mm-hmm.
He'd given her some heroin, got her addicted to heroin,
mm-hmm.
and then started pimping her to say, hey, I can help you keep your drugs if you just have sex with these guys. And he had his girlfriend also, that he was pimping out his girlfriend.
Scummy.
Todd, I think he's got serious character
yeah.
flaws. I hope that he can find some help. I don't know that he's found the help that he needs.
Well,
yet,
he may, and he was arrogant enough the first time around, he probably doesn't think he needs any help. Like, whatever he does, he should be able to do, you know? I mean, there are people in society that believe that.
Right.
And he
right.
seems to be one.
Yeah.
First of all, he's a white kid
yeah.
that claims he's black.
Yeah.
Then he changed, rolled over on friends,
yeah.
and thinks he's above the law. I mean,
yeah.
he's hell-bent for leather. Yeah.
Yeah. I know I'm just being really preachy. I have another PI
yeah.
tip. People think all the time, like, they're my friends. They'll never roll over on me. Like, they'll never tell. They'll never do this. I am in the system. Let me tell you what. to save their own skin, people will do crazy, awful things. They will not protect you. I do not see them protect their friends. They throw their friends under the bus in a heartbeat, just like Todd did. So the victim's family, I see so much humanity doing this work, whether it's good or bad, or so many life lessons for me. And the victim's father, in this case, he made a statement. When David LeDuc was convicted, the victim's father made a statement. The media was all over this. They asked him afterwards, did you get justice on this case? Are you happy now that you got justice? And he said, there really isn't justice for something like this.
Yeah,
I lost my son. As David LeDuc was being hauled off in handcuffs after the conviction, he turned to his mother and said, I love you. I'll always love you. Mm-hmm. And his mom was just bawling. Absolutely amazing to me that the victim's father, afterwards, when they asked him about justice, after having seen that, he said, this was a loss for everyone. Right. He said, I lost my son and she lost her son.
Right.
This is a tragedy.
Right.
And for someone to even not, I mean, not just to see it, because it's kind of easy to see, but to be able to take it into your heart.
Right.
To, like, wow, like these people are hurting like I'm hurting.
Right.
Mm-hmm. That is some real compassion.
I agree.
And I am so impressed by the humanity of that. Like I say, I see some of the best of humanity and some of the worst of humanity all in the same case.
Right.
Sometimes in the same moment.
Right.
You see the best and the worst of humanity.
So true.
And so when Troy Rawlings, when he had the decision to make about whether to prosecute David LeDuc again, to try him again, and he chose not to do a second trial, the father made a statement and said, you know, while we're saddened by the, you know, the loss of our son, we really hope that whatever lessons needed to be learned by David LeDuc, that they were learned while he was in prison. And here's what's really another cool thing. LeDuc actually got his associate's degree while he was in prison.
Oh, okay.
He was well on his way to get his bachelor's degree. He hadn't received it yet. There was some like glitch in it. So I hope that he finished, like actually got his diploma when he got out of there.
Right. And was able to move forward.
I think he most likely did. I cannot find any charges on him, nor can I find any for Rashad. So for those things, for these life lessons, in this case, I really am grateful. It was a fascinating case. That is my case of murder at the motel. Thanks for listening to Pamela Private Eye.